All right, here we are with Matt Hogan, CIO of Bitwise. Bitwise, of course, is one of the issuers of spot Bitcoin ETFs, which of course started trading this week. So Matt, I'm so excited to have you here on the Defiant podcast. Welcome.
I'm so excited to be here on this historic week. Thanks for having me.
Amazing. So, you know, it's been, this is the second day of trading for spot Bitcoin ETFs ever. So I just want to start off by getting your impressions of, you know, what that's looked like so far. Has it been a success in terms of volume, flows? Like what's your initial reaction?
Yeah, I think it's been a big success in terms of both volume and flows. Our ETF, BITB, took in $240 million in flows in the first day, which would make it among the top 1% of ETF launches of all time. So that's pretty good. And that's just one ETF amongst a suite of, let's say, 11. Mm-hmm. I think all told, the 11 ETFs did something like $5 billion of trading volume in day one. And then just as importantly, day two has been very strong as well, hundreds of millions. If you look at ETFs historically, that's not usually the case. First of all, day one was much bigger than the average ETF. The average ETF usually sort of tiptoes into the market, and we came out with a bang. And day two is usually even quieter. So I think what you're seeing in the market shows that there's sustained demand for these, and then that will build over time. I think it's been a fabulous launch.
So with about over 600 million of flows in the first day, the expectations that this will bring in new, you know, investment into Bitcoin appears to be coming true, at least, you know, in the very initial days of trading. What do you think the impact will be for Bitcoin down the line? Like if you have a forecast for what those flows will be, maybe for the entire year?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've heard forecasts of around $10 billion for the year. I think those are reasonable. Some forecasts go out to $200 billion in the next couple of years. That seems aggressive, but potentially possible. For what it's worth, that would make it the most successful ETF launch of all time, which is pretty cool, considering Bitcoin is an alternative asset that most people are not familiar with. The fact that there's that much demand is a reminder that Bitcoin is onto something really big. And that will, of course, have impacts on Bitcoin's price. I think in day one, day two, day three, day four, some of those flows may be mitigated by the fact that people are rotating out of higher fee products into lower fee products. And so they may be offset, as an example. But in a very real sense, Bitwise went out last night and bought $237 million worth of Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. That sort of demand over time happening day after day after day, we won't see those kind of flows every day, but significant buying by the suite every day will really add up. It'll really add up. I make an analogy to Bitcoin halvings. You know, we know that the price of Bitcoin tends to ride around the halving. We don't expect it to rise the day of the halving because it's a cumulative impact. The same thing is true here. This is really a month, quarter, and year story. But the buying is very real, hundreds of millions of dollars.
So, of course, Bitcoin has already been rising with the expectation that ETFs would be approved. The price reaction after the approval was a bit muted. Bitcoin was flat on the day yesterday. It's been down, the last I checked today. It appears it was maybe not as big as a sell the news event as some thought, but definitely, you know, Bitcoin didn't keep rallying after the approval. Do you think for the time being, all of the flows that were expected because of the ETFs, have those been priced in the rally that Bitcoin already did leading up to the ETF approval?
Yeah, I think the short-term flows are priced in. I think that's what we're seeing in the market, right? The price has been volatile, but it hasn't moved that much since it became clear these were going to launch, which really came on Wednesday night. So I think it's fair to think that the immediate flows are likely priced in. I think the market dramatically underestimates the long-term impact. I think by a factor of quite a few. I'll give you an example from ETF history, because I spent 15 years in the ETF industry. In 2004, gold ETFs launched. Gold was a $2 trillion market. Today, it's a $15 trillion market. And the ETF has contributed significantly to that. And I think we're going to see, you know, tens and tens of billions of dollars of flows into these ETFs over the years. And that's going to be tremendously supportive of prices. But short term, volatile, unchanged, that's maybe what you should expect. Long term, I think it's really substantial.
Interesting that you think it's being underestimated, you know, the impact that ETFs will have.
Yeah, definitely underestimated. One funny thing about crypto, you know, crypto is built primarily from self-directed retail investors, people buying it individually. And there are a lot of those people, and they're very important, but they only control about 20% of the wealth in America. Wealth is unfortunately not evenly distributed. The vast majority of the wealth is controlled by either financial advisors, who are people that help other people invest, or institutions. That's 80% of the wealth. So we went from zero to $44,000, essentially capturing only one-fifth of the market. And what ETFs do is they open up the other four-fifths. Mm-hmm. And that's really substantial, particularly at a time when there's a relative scarcity of supply of new Bitcoin coming onto the market. That's why I think people underestimate it, because self-directed retail investors occupy a huge mind space. And they're what people talk about on CNBC, and there are movies about them, and people can relate to them because most of us are self-directed retail investors. But we only control, you know, 20% of the market. It's really these other two buckets that have almost all of the wealth. They couldn't buy Bitcoin easily until Thursday, and now they can. And that's why I think it's dramatically underestimated long term.
Okay, so self-directed investors are just like individuals buying Bitcoin on exchanges.
Yep.
And so you're saying the large majority of investors are buying assets through asset managers, and so that's what this spot Bitcoin ETF is enabling, for asset managers to buy Bitcoin through this investment vehicle. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exactly right. These financial professionals can't invest through apps. They can't invest. In many cases, they were restricted from investing in Bitcoin by rules and regulations. But once they can buy it in an ETF, it opens those doors. Not all at once. Many of them open on Thursday. Within a year, they'll probably all be open. And that's just a huge amount of capital, trillions and trillions of dollars, that for the first time ever can access this asset, which is extremely attractive, right? It's the best performing asset in the world over the last 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. They're going to want to gain exposure. They just couldn't. And now they can. So it's a big deal.
And related to that, there was news that asset managers like huge ones like Vanguard aren't offering these products to their clients. Super surprising. Like I thought, you know, if there's a widely expected ETF or investment product, it should be in their interest to offer that. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they're goofy is my thought on it. I mean, you can buy some crazy ETFs on Vanguard. You can buy 3x levered, you know, Jim Cramer investment pick ETFs, ETFs with high volatility. The reality is Americans want to own crypto. There are 56 million accounts at Coinbase. Bitcoin ETFs dramatically lower the cost and raise the peace of mind for doing that, and preventing people from accessing it in a regulated, secure wrapper just forces them to figure it out on their own in less regulated, less institutional, and often more expensive locations. And to me, that's just a loss for investors. I suspect that over time, Vanguard and others will change their policies. They're traditionally conservative shops. But right now, yeah, at least Vanguard, maybe one or two others, is taking a no-go approach. Again, I think they'll change over time, just not yet.
And, you know, related to that, my observation about Bitcoin ETFs is that, you know, it's a huge milestone. But to me, it is, to be honest, a little bit bittersweet, because it's all about, you know, packaging Bitcoin in this traditional, you know, asset, you know, and using these traditional rails for it to be traded by institutions. To me, like, hopefully at some point, Wall Street will be using blockchain rails to trade tokenized securities. Interestingly, like BlackRock's Larry Fink today said in an interview, he said, we're going down the road to tokenization. So it's something that, you know, the biggest minds in Wall Street are seeing down the line. But for now, it seems like, you know, for Bitcoin to be traded, it needs to be packaged in this traditional way. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, how close do you think Wall Street is to trading crypto in a more like crypto native way through like blockchain rails?
Yeah, I would first say I totally appreciate the irony of packaging Bitcoin into an ETF. It does run counter to that self-sovereignty thing. Although I think what it does is it moves Bitcoin along to the point where it can really fulfill its dreams. We're deeply committed to Bitcoin. I just add, you know, we announced we're donating 10% of the profits from our ETF to Bitcoin open source developers at Brink, OpenSats, and the Human Rights Foundation. So we want to make sure that the Bitcoin ETF is good for Bitcoin. And long-term, I do think we're moving down the rails toward tokenization. Look, that is inevitable. The legacy financial system is abysmally slow. You know, people are just finding out today that many of these ETF investments settle T plus two, which means they settle 3 days after they happen. Which in crypto is like a year and a half. I mean, it's completely absurd. And that just shows you why we do need to move to tokenization. But the Bitcoin ETF gets us there. I mean, your point about Larry Fink is a great example. If not for the Bitcoin ETF, I doubt BlackRock would be embracing concepts like tokenization. It's still a few years off. I'd say it's still, you know, 3 to 5 to 10 years off. But this is a step in that direction. I really do think it moves us. So people across Wall Street woke up and thought about Bitcoin in a new way yesterday. And they're doing it again today. And that's going to push us down that path toward tokenization.
And the road to get here has been just so long and just tough. So it does. Yeah, it is even a bigger milestone because of how hard it is, right? How hard it's been to get here. The first Bitcoin ETF application was filed by the Winklevoss twins back in 2013. And just now we're getting an approval. So I'd love to get your you know, if you can just like run us through what this history has been and what enabled us to finally get an approval.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Yeah, it's been amazing. The Winklevoss twins did pave the way. I think July 1st, 2013 is when they first filed for a spot Bitcoin ETF. Bitcoin was trading for $88. And our regulators have protected us from accessing an asset that went from $88 to $44,000, which is pretty amazing. Bitwise has been working on it for 5 years on our own. You know, there are multiple issuers in this space, but we've had over 35 meetings with the SEC talking about this ETF. So they have been putting in the work. The gating factor historically was the SEC's concerns about potential market manipulation in the underlying Bitcoin market. And while I'm not sympathetic to the SEC as a broad scope, they were right to be concerned in 2013, right? The Bitcoin market was not very mature in 2013. Custodians were not very well established. There wasn't a lot of liquidity. I think arguably they were even right to reject Bitcoin ETFs back then. The market wasn't ready. It's been ready for a long time. It's been ready for multiple years. We've had institutional custodians. We've had firms like Fidelity and Coinbase, publicly traded firms custodying crypto assets. Crypto trades billions of dollars. They're regulated futures on the CME. So Bitcoin's been institutional grade for a number of years. What actually changed it was Grayscale sued them. I mean, Grayscale is a friendly competitor of ours, but I give them a huge amount of credit. The SEC approved Bitcoin futures ETFs, which track the price of Bitcoin, and then rejected spot Bitcoin ETFs, even though they used the exact same price. And Grayscale sued them, saying that was an arbitrary and capricious decision. And a judicial panel ruled unanimously that they were right. And that really swung the door wide open. There have been a bunch of people who have contributed. I feel like Bitwise has contributed. I feel Fidelity and others have contributed. But Grayscale deserves a huge shout out for forcing the issue with the SEC. And I should say, the end result of that is that investors have the ability to lower their fees of holding Bitcoin in a fund by 90%. Like, it's a huge win for investors. So, I commend them for their work. And I think I'm glad we finally crossed this threshold.
That 90% of cost reduction, do you mean compared to holding Bitcoin in GBTC?
Yeah, I mean compared to holding Bitcoin in GBTC. And I know Grayscale has lowered their fee as well. But all of the, you know, ETFs in every asset class, actually, not just Bitcoin, are known for pushing huge pressure on price because they're just a very efficient investment vehicle. They're more efficient than mutual funds or other approaches. So you see incredible cost compression, and that's what we've seen here too. And for what it's worth, that's going to trickle into other parts of the crypto industry. I bet you'll see custody fees come down. I bet you'll see trading commissions at crypto brokerages come down. So even if you're never going to buy a Bitcoin ETF, you should be happy it exists, because it's going to create fee pressure across the industry. No matter how you access the space, you're going to see your fees coming down, down, down because of the pressure these ETFs exert.
Oh, super interesting. And, you know, related to that, of course, Bitwise has the lowest fees among the 11 issuers at 0.2%. And so I'm wondering how... And this came after this like really interesting fee war that, you know, we saw people just like cutting and cutting and cutting their fees. You usually see this type of activity, I don't know, like after ETFs have launched, but this all happened even before the launch. So that was interesting to see. So how are you able to offer your fund at these levels? Like what needs to happen and be true for this to be a profitable decision for you?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing to understand is Bitwise already has a large existing business with all the capabilities to run crypto funds, right? We manage over $1 billion in assets before BITB launched across 19 products. So we have research, capital markets, sales, distribution, custody, trading, etc. Adding an ETF on top of that actually doesn't increase your costs incrementally all that much, because you already have that infrastructure. I know a lot of other players, this is their first crypto fund, and so for them, it's a high barrier. But one of the reasons we were able to reduce the cost so much is it's just a small incremental cost above the business that we've already built. All that said, I think this is going to be a great business for us. And the reason I say this is I think this is a $10, $20, $30, $40 billion product eventually. And while 20 basis points is not very much, right? It's whatever, $2 for every $1,000 you invest. Scaled up to $10 billion, that's a pretty great business. If you believe that Bitcoin is as big as I believe it's going to be, and if you think the ETF is as good a vehicle as I think it is, then you're talking about multiple billions, and 20 basis points is a great business. But it did help that we have this sort of strong foundation that we've built over 7 years. So we weren't adding much from an incremental cost basis.
Super interesting. And then do you attribute this, I mean, the fact that your ETF is the cheapest to Bitwise having the largest amount of flows?
I think it's a big factor. ETF investors are trained to search out low-cost funds. I think you have to be very competitive in this market. I think the other factor that's helped us is, you know, that 7 year track record. I mean, we've been talking to people about ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs, the potential for these ETFs for many years. We have a 20 person sales team who did 20,000 meetings with financial advisors over the last year, whether on the phone or in person. And so I think we had a lot of investors that were primed to invest and pre-existing relationships, being able to talk to them about crypto over the years. That's no guarantee we'll continue to be the largest every day. I do intend to win this market long term. But I think those are the two advantages. Being the lowest, we had good marketing campaigns, but we have an incredible sales and distribution team. And I think that was a key factor.
Awesome. And then before we get into the broader implications of Bitcoin ETFs and maybe what other cryptos are next, I'd love to talk about your background. And you've talked a little bit about Bitwise, but Bitwise as well. You've been in the ETF game for so long. You have, you know, such expertise in this. So how did this all, you know, start for you, your involvement?
Yeah, it's incredible to watch my previous background in ETFs collide with my current background in crypto. But you're absolutely right. I spent 15 plus years in the ETF industry, including as CEO of ETF.com, fortunate to create the first ETF data and classifications and ranking system. I wrote the CFA's guide to ETFs. I won a Lifetime Achievement Award for contributions to the ETF industry. The fun thing about ETFs is they're so popular now, right? It's a $7 trillion market. Everyone considers them sort of the apple pie of investing, the most wholesome thing. But when they launched, people hated them. So I know it's hard to imagine, but the Financial Times, which hates crypto, labeled them weapons of mass destruction. There were congressional hearings about whether ETFs would destroy American entrepreneurialism, whether they should be shut down. They were labeled un-American. People hated them. So what I saw in them is they were a new technology that made the financial ecosystem more efficient because they lower costs, they reduce tax, et cetera. And I just saw this vitriolic reaction to them. And so I was fortunate to build a great career. We built ETF.com and sold it. And after I sold it, I looked around. I was like, what is the next huge financial technology breakthrough that that can make things dramatically more efficient and that people hate? And that was crypto for sure, right? Congressional hearings, weapons of mass destruction. It's the same trademark. That gives me so much confidence in crypto because I've seen ETFs go from very little to $7 trillion, from pariah to the apple pie of investing. And I think crypto is on that same journey. And this is like a huge step forward in this huge validation. So yeah, that's how my two backgrounds connect. I've been at Bitwise for 6+ years now. We've already made progress in moving down that chain, right? 6 years ago, people talked about, would crypto go away? Is crypto going away now that BlackRock has an ETF? I don't think so, right? That conversation is gone. So I do think we're on a similar journey, and it's fun to see history repeat.
It's so crazy, this reaction to ETFs. Like, what was the argument for hating ETFs so much?
Well, there are probably two ways to answer that. The real argument was they're hugely disruptive to a giant profit center on Wall Street. The average mutual fund charged over 1%, and ETFs now charge maybe 10, 15 basis points. So they were going to cut fees on Wall Street by 85%. And Wall Street doesn't like that. I think when you listen to Jamie Dimon talk about Bitcoin, you can hear in the back of his voice that he is concerned about the same level of disruption. The other piece was people fundamentally not understanding how they work. So there were, for instance, a lot of concerns around how fixed income ETFs would work and whether the liquidity would be there. But it was really because people didn't take the time to understand the mechanics of how ETFs work. If you did that, you would realize that actually they would help with liquidity. And so I see the same thing again in crypto. I see people afraid of disruption, and I see fundamental misunderstandings about the technology. And those are the sources of fear. That's the source of reactionary response. And yeah, I mean, I think that's why we saw it in ETFs. That's why we see it here.
Oh, that's so crazy. Okay, and then you saw in crypto and Bitcoin this same degree of potential disruption for the investment industry that ETFs had. And then you started Bitwise as a asset manager for digital assets.
Yeah, so I saw the same potential for disruption. I mean, legacy finance is terrible, right? It takes 2 days to wire money. We all know the things. It's sort of stuck in the early 1900s. So I saw how crypto could disrupt that. I got connected with Hunter Horsley and Hong Kim, who are the founders of Bitwise, by a good friend, Spencer Bogart at Blockchain Capital. In an ironic twist, Spencer actually once worked for me at ETF.com mm-hmm. before he went on to be the first Wall Street analyst covering Bitcoin. And I was immediately taken with Bitwise's core product offering because it had the first crypto index fund. And for many investors who don't want to pick a coin or pick an asset, don't know how it's going to turn out, an index fund is a great solution because then you own the market. And if crypto gets bigger, you will do well. And I just thought this is going to be a multi-billion dollar product, a multi-billion dollar market. I loved Hong and Hunter. They're incredible entrepreneurs. And so, yeah, I was happy to leave my position at the firm that had acquired ETF.com and make the leap back into startup land. It was really, really fun. It's been an energizing 6 years. I can't wait for the next six.
Awesome. Okay, and then talking about what's next. So, yeah, Bitcoin spot ETFs were the first product. And now there's speculation that, you know, maybe Ethereum ETFs are next or, you know, somebody I think said they think that even like Ripple would come even before ETH, but whatever the case, I mean, do you think that's right? Do you think that Bitcoin is the first of many crypto ETFs?
Yeah, I think it depends on your time horizon. It's a great question. I think there's a clear line of sight to an Ethereum ETF. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think if you look at the wording of the approval, they tried to make it not easy to get to Ethereum. But there's a regulated Ethereum futures market. It's much the similar situation as Bitcoin. There are Ethereum futures ETFs. I just think it's going to be very challenging for the SEC to not allow spot Ethereum ETFs, which is great, right? Dramatically reduce the cost. And for what it's worth, I think TradFi may have an easier time understanding Ethereum even than they do Bitcoin. So I think an Ethereum ETF would be great. There's a pretty big gap beyond Ethereum to anything else. And that includes Ripple, actually. The argument for Ripple is that there's a court ruling that it's not a security, which is a big advantage. But right now, in order to have an ETF, you need to have a parallel market. Maybe this is too deep, but you need to have a parallel market that's regulated and you can surveil. So even though it's a spot Bitcoin ETF, the approval hinged on the existence of the regulated Bitcoin futures market. So that's true in Ethereum. You could have a spot Ethereum ETF because there's a regulated Ethereum market, but there are no other regulated futures markets. So until we get a new commission or new action on derivatives or new regulation, Bitcoin and Ethereum are it. That said, you know, I do think many of the people who buy these ETFs will then investigate other parts of crypto. I know a lot of us, the first asset we bought is Bitcoin. Today we may own many. And so, you know, Bitwise offers 18 other funds. We have Ethereum funds, we have Solana funds, we have diversified funds, we have NFT products, we have a wide variety. And we expect many people who come in through the door of Bitcoin to also explore these other opportunities as well. But ETF-wise, Bitcoin, Ethereum, then it's going to be a little while.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's the point about having a parallel regulated market is great. And yeah, it's only Bitcoin and Ethereum have that mm-hmm. right now. Yep. And what you mentioned something about how the wording made it hard to approve other ETFs. What about it makes you say that?
Without having the rulings, the exact or more like the signing letters that Gensler and others posted alongside the actual text of the ruling. But they tried to position it as a one-off, right? I think they were very clear, A, that they were not endorsing Bitcoin, but B, that this was a unique situation with a unique court case, et cetera. And you see this in many legal cases outside of crypto, where a judge will rule but want to restrict it to just this specific thing without creating broad-based precedent. I think the wording of those signing statements suggests that. But I think the situation is just overwhelming. There are Ethereum futures ETFs in the market. I think that gets you spot Ethereum. I mean, that was at the heart of the Grayscale lawsuit. You had Bitcoin futures ETFs. How can you not have Bitcoin ETFs? That's a difficult argument to get after. I don't think it'll be easy. I don't think it'll be a matter of a few months. But within 12 months, I think there's a pretty good chance we see ETH.
So I think the first decision is due in May. You don't think it'll happen by then?
I don't know. I'm, of course, hopeful it will. But maybe it's PTSD because we just went through 10 years of waiting for a spot Bitcoin ETF. But I think there are more complications around Ethereum. There are questions involving staking and other aspects that make it more moving parts. So maybe May, but I wouldn't be surprised if that extended out some amount of months. But I do think we'll get there, and I think it'll be a win for investors.
Do you have a Ethereum ETF application in?
We do not right now. We do not right now.
Is that something that you're planning?
Yeah, we would love to when we think the time is right. So, you know, stay tuned. But we're committed. We're committed to being a leader in the crypto ETF market. So. Yeah, we're definitely looking at Ethereum, you know, right now.
And curious that you said before you think TradFi will have an easier time understanding Ethereum. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, because there are tangible use cases that you can point to. And there are something closer to cash flows that allow you to do effectively discounted cash flow analysis to arrive at valuation targets. Bitcoin has no cash flow. It's going after the store of value or alternative currency rail market. Those are enormous markets. I think it makes it extremely valuable. But some of TradFi's brain just breaks when you're not dealing with cash flow and you're not dealing with applications that you can pick up and use on your phone, right? I can show an advisor Uniswap and how beautiful it is and walk them through how that interfaces. I can talk to them about stable coins. And soon I think there's going to be an enormous explosion of those things. And that sort of appeals to the traditional finance mind, I think, in a way that a new store of value or a new apolitical currency rail is difficult for some people to grok.
Interesting. Right. So it's like with Ethereum, you can show them the applications that are being built on top, and so that can help them understand the value of this blockchain because you see all these things are working on top of it.
That's exactly right, and you can imagine new applications, and you can imagine people using them, and you can unlock visions of how the world could easily get better that aren't giant leaps; they're more incremental. Right. This is like a little bit better than the existing centralized crypto exchanges, or this is a little bit better than your experience of getting a margin loan at your bank. As opposed to, and this is not what I think of Bitcoin, but many TradFi people, we have this new digital currency backed by nothing that's going to take over the world. Right. That's like a big leap for them. Whereas with Ethereum, you can do much smaller leaps. And I think that's beneficial.
If you haven't already considered building your next smart contract in Rust, you gotta have a look at Sorabon. You can migrate your existing Solidity smart contracts over to Sorabon, and we'll show you how. You can also get funding for your projects. There's a $100 million adoption fund just to drive the adoption of Sorabon, so you can help build the ecosystem and potentially qualify for grant awards up to $150,000. You can visit us now at sorabon.stellar.org to learn more.
Do you think an Ethereum ETF would include staking yield, or how do you think that would work?
It's a very good question, and it's really complex to answer. The existing structure that you have to put ETFs in are something called a grantor trust structure. One way to think of grantor trust structure is you typically just put things in there and they sit there. They don't do anything. That's what the structure wants to do, is nothing. And so staking is something. And so it's hard for this box that does nothing to do something. But, people want staked yield. and Wall Street is very creative. So I bet the market will figure it out, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It's possible that Ethereum ETFs come to market that can't stake because of this grantor trust restriction on their activity.
Okay, so maybe just plain ETH will be first for an ETF, and then, you know, somebody will come up with a new structure that will allow for staked ETH or something.
That's certainly possible. I know we're all going to be pushing for staked ETH because we want to maximize long-term returns for investors, and there are ways to stake safely. But it's certainly possible that you'll get plain ETH first, and that would still be a win. Right. Many people could access it for the first time at extremely low costs. But yeah, the ETF engine won't stop until it gets the most perfect package we can. That would be staked ETH. Just might take a while.
Mm-hmm. So for like broader crypto, what do you think the impact will be? We talked about flows. Do you think that, you know, there's a bigger impact about, you know, just getting the recognition of Wall Street, of, you know, of Bitcoin being a part of portfolios out there, of just, you know, being accepted as something that's one more asset class and not some, you know, strange kind of... magical internet money used by criminals.
Right.
Is that going to be, you know, the impact beyond flows, and how do you think that looks like?
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be that. It's a complete game changer. And I can give you an example from my ETF history. I know it's hard for people to imagine right now, when we think of gold as this deeply institutional asset that wears a fancy suit and goes to all the fancy conferences and you can talk about it at pension funds. But before the gold ETF, gold was not that. It was a alternative weird asset. There were actually people had names for people who bought gold. They were called gold bugs. Mm. People said they wore tinfoil hats. They called it a barbarous relic. Warren Buffett made fun of it. I don't know if any of those things sound familiar, but once we got the gold ETF, which was developed, by the way, by gold mining companies because they wanted gold to be taken seriously. Once we got the gold ETF, it completely changed overnight. And now gold can sit at the table with stocks and bonds and real estate and private equity, and it doesn't look strange. The same thing is going to be happening for crypto, and specifically Bitcoin, because that's what we got the ETF for. It won't happen in a week or a month or even a year, but 3 years from now, it's not going to be strange for a Wall Street firm to have a crypto group that facilitates trading, custody, or holding of Bitcoin. You're going to see Wall Street analysts writing about Bitcoin. You're going to see institutions holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet. I suspect we'll get to the point where central banks are considering Bitcoin on their balance sheet. The ETF really is historically a massive game changer in terms of normalizing an asset and bringing it into the mainstream. And I think it's already happening, right? I don't know. I've been doing calls with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. They all want to talk about Bitcoin right now because of an ETF. And I think it's going to change the game completely.
So interesting. And right now, what do you think is the average percentage holding of Bitcoin in an asset manager's portfolio, and how do you think that'll change over time?
Yeah, you know, at Bitwise, we estimate that the average client, we don't know specifically, has maybe 2.5% of their portfolio in Bitcoin. I will say a few years ago that was closer to 1%, and we think it's going to 5%. I would suspect that that's the range, is 1% to 5%. Below 1% is too small for many people to care. Above 5%, you start having a significant impact on portfolio volatility. So we think it's in the 1% to 5% range. But remember, this is out of trillions and trillions of dollars of assets. So I suspect that's where it will be. As Bitcoin grows, it may grow a bit. But at 5%, we'd have enormous inflows. And I think we'll get there.
Do you think that's a good level, though? Like 5% still feels like so low in terms of, you know, just like overall holdings.
Well, I definitely have more than that in my personal portfolio. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a great start. I mean, you're starting from zero, right? Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people actually have zero. And if you're as optimistic about Bitcoin as I am, from a fiat denominated perspective, the impact of 5% on a portfolio could be transformational, right? If you think that Bitcoin is going to double or triple or 10x before it reaches even early stages of maturity, then a 5% allocation can have a very big impact. Do I think it could be larger? Of course. Again, in my personal portfolio, it's much, much, much higher than that. But these are conservative investors and a new asset. And I think 1 to 5% is a great range. It would make me happy.
Mm. How much would 5% be in terms of flows? Like going back to the question from earlier.
Yeah. Hundreds of billions of dollars of flows. Mm-hmm. And just so the audience is aware, that doesn't mean the market cap of Bitcoin goes up hundreds of billions of dollars. It means there's hundreds of billions of dollars of buying pressure. And so there's typically a significant multiple on that in terms of the price. Another way to contextualize that, we're excited about the halving. The halving will remove $7 billion in annual creation of Bitcoin based on current prices. So that's how much the supply will drop, is $7 billion a year. You and I discussed maybe this year we'll get $10 billion of flow into the ETF. So from a scale perspective, the ETF has a bigger impact potentially on supply demand dynamics than this halving. That's why they would contextualize that. And then it's not every 4 years, it's not quadrennial. It's annual, right? It keeps going every year. So that's one way of thinking about the scale of this impact.
So interesting to put it in the halving perspective. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yep. Yeah.
Related to that, what about, you know, criticism that, you know, the fact that you have all these huge asset managers buying and buying more Bitcoin, it obviously, you know, starts to centralize ownership. It makes the asset less decentralized.
Yeah, I think there's reasons to be concerned about that. And I do think, you know, I'm talking my book here, but investors should allocate with crypto providers who really care about crypto. And Bitwise is not alone in that. There are a number of firms, Valkyrie, VanEck, others, who really care about crypto. I will say, I keep going back to these old analogies. I apologize. You got me in my old ETF mindset. People worried about the same thing about gold. Gold is similar to Bitcoin in that you can self-sovereignly hold wealth, right? You can take a gold bar and put it under your mattress. And believe it or not, there's nothing new in crypto. Believe it or not, during the time gold ETFs were launching, people talked about it as paper gold and how, you know, not your gold, you have no protection. But a funny thing happened when the gold ETF launched, which is that the annual demand for gold bars and coins, in other words, to put it in crypto terms, the annual demand for self-sovereignty of gold multiplied 5x over the next 5 years. So the ETF competed with some people who were going to buy gold and self-sovereign gold bars or coins. But more than that, it increased the number of people interested in gold, and therefore the self-sovereign quadrant grew even more. And it's actually much larger than the gold quadrant. Like the amount of gold owned directly has been a bigger factor of gold demand than the ETF itself. I actually expect the same thing in crypto. People worry like paper Bitcoin, ETF Bitcoin will compete with people doing self-custody. I don't think so. I think you're going to see a dramatic expansion of self-custody as people accept Bitcoin as this really important asset, as they learn more about it. Some people will come in through ETFs and then move on to self-custody. Other people who are thinking about Bitcoin generally will hear more about it and they'll go the self-custody route. I really think everyone wins here. Of course, we should be concerned about centralization. And again, you know, focus on crypto asset managers that care about crypto. But my experience with gold and the data there suggests it just grows the market. And actually the self-sovereign piece will probably grow more even than the ETF piece.
That's such an interesting perspective. So is it kind of like a Bitcoin ETF is serves as marketing for Bitcoin? Maybe, you know, people will see it in their brokerage and want to learn more about it, or it's more accepted, so people are less afraid of getting involved. And so, yeah, the number, the amount of people who will just go buy Bitcoin directly rather than through an ETF just increases, maybe because of the ETF.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. That is precisely right. It lifts all boats. You know, if Bitcoin is going to get to where we all want it to be, you need massive education. And now we have another educational outlet. We have all these firms talking about Bitcoin. We have all this interest. And yes, some of the people will come into the ETF. That's great. That's where my business is. But a lot of them will end up, you know, true Bitcoin. And I love that too. I think it's great.
Awesome. And then, you know, looking forward, what comes next for the ETF? Is it just, business as usual? Do you keep marketing it? Yeah, like what are you looking at as next steps?
So much work. It's just day one in ETF land, or day two, I guess, today. But yeah, going forward, now you have to go out and talk to people and raise assets. So that includes, you know, having meetings with people. It includes marketing campaigns. It includes sales and distribution, which sounds minor. But, you know, we have 20 people that all day, all they do is talk to financial advisors about Bitcoin and crypto. And then you multiply that by us and BlackRock and VanEck and others, and it's a tremendous force going out into the market that can talk about Bitcoin that never did before. There's a lot for us to do just because it's, you know, it's an ETF. We talked about this. It's not approved everywhere. So we have to go talk to Morgan Stanley, and we have to go talk to UBS, and we have to open all those, the rest of those doors. But the doors open a crack, and now everyone's going to push through.
Awesome. And then for this year, are you expecting a new bull market for crypto, maybe spurred by the Bitcoin ETF, maybe by the halving?
I think we're already in a bull market for crypto. I think this is just the latest catalyst. So absolutely, we look for, we think there will be a new all-time high this year. I think the three primary catalysts are the Bitcoin ETF, which I think is a big one, the halving, which is also a big one, and the potential for interest rate cuts, which is beneficial for Bitcoin as well. But there's just a lot to look forward to. But, you know, I think we're in a multi-year bull market cycle. I think we're going higher. I think that was true regardless of the ETF, but the ETF will be helpful. And then outside of Bitcoin, there's a lot to look forward to too, right? There's EIP 4844 and Ethereum, which I think will open the door to a million interesting applications. There's what Coinbase is doing on Base. There's the rebirth of Solana. There's what's going on in gaming. Every crypto cycle, you see this level of excitement. And it's just sort of wherever you look in crypto, ETFs, gaming, you know, improvements at layer one, growth on layer two. There's so much to be excited about. So absolutely, I think it's going to be the biggest bull market ever from a market cap perspective. I think it's going to be significant.
Oh, interesting. Do you have a forecast for price of Bitcoin, maybe price of ETH?
Yeah, on Bitcoin again, we think it's gonna top $80,000. That's what we've made in our predictions at the start of the year. I don't have a similar forecast for Ethereum, but I'm very bullish as well. Forecasts are tough. You have to run them through compliance. Mm-hmm. So I can't give you one off the top of my head, but we're bullish across the ecosystem. We also think there'll be a number of assets that that emerge that are really significant as well. You know, look, we had a great cycle from 2019 to 2021. And then for obvious reasons, we pulled back in 2022 and we've cleared those demons and we're building new infrastructure. But I really think we're entering the mainstream era of crypto. There's just so much to be excited about, so many more access points. Technology is getting so much better. I think the next 18 months will be among the most exciting in crypto's history. So
amazing. That's a great place to finish off the interview. Really appreciate you coming to the podcast. Congrats on a really successful launch for the ETF. And yeah, thanks again for taking the time.
Thanks for doing it. It's been fun to be here. Mm-hmm.